they're spiraling just like you. Hello, welcome back to Spiraling. I'm Serena.
And I'm Katie.
That was a weighted
pause. We can't decide how to start this.
We can't decide how to start, which is apt because today we're going to talk about decision making and anxiety and FOMO and all of that lovely stuff. We've actually been wanting to talk about decision making forever because both of our anxiety seriously pools in decision making.
Yeah.
So buckle up for this one.
Yeah, it needed to be a whole episode. It's going to be sprinkled throughout our lives and this show, but it's deserving of a solo episode.
Yes. We'll spiral first.
Yeah, we're spiraling. That's how we usually start this. We forgot.
We're killing it today. Okay, so I'm actually really excited to tell you my spiral. It's a good one. You know I love medium trashy novels. They're my favorite thing. They're actually great for my anxiety. I love to read. I love escapism. And to me, I started calling my preferred genre of literature, if you will, medium trashy years ago, just in having discussions with my friends and trying to describe the type of books that I like. And like, to me, because I made this up, I can define it however I like, but medium trashy refers to purely escapist novels, although I'll occasionally throw in a short story or like an autobiography. But like escapist books that are well written, but don't make you think too hard. Like they're not the type of books that you're going to make notes in the margin or have to reread paragraphs over and over to like suss out the true meaning, you know? And it typically falls into two categories. There's medium trashy romance and medium trashy thrillers. I tend to like thrillers more, but I do appreciate a good medium trashy romance. So the best medium trashy romance that I've read in 2020 and definitely in my top five ever is The Idea of You by Robin Lee. I read it, I want to say in January or so. I have been waxing poetic about it ever since. In a nutshell, some people say it's Harry Styles fan fiction. I don't know if this is true or not, but it's basically a woman in her 40s falls in love with this boy band member who's 20, and they have this insanely hot and heavy love affair, whirlwind romance. And it's really well written, actually. It's also like borderline erotica. It's amazing. And I loved it. And I recommend it all the time. And so it just so happens, I think, because it's summer, a lot of people are reading escapist literature. And also we're in a pandemic. So I've gotten so many messages this week on Instagram from people being like, oh my God, I just finished The Idea of You. It's amazing. I never wanted it to end. And I completely agree, like yet to hear of a disappointed reader. So I went on Instagram recently and was like, I have gotten so many messages about The Idea of You this week. It's my favorite medium trashy romance that I've read in 2020. I have been recommending it. I'm going to keep recommending it. It's awesome. Please read it. And the problem is there's multiple books called The Idea of You, because every time I mention it, a bunch of people ask which book, like who's the author. So I thought I would cut that off at the pass by.
Plus, it's good to support the author, and
it's good to support the author too.
Yeah.
So I thought I would cut this off at the pass and support the author by tagging her in my Insta story, and then she sent me a DM being like, "LOL, I don't think I've ever been called medium trashy before, but I'll take it," or whatever, and I instantly started spiraling because, you know, first of all, you know, I hate to offend people. And then I realized how this probably sounded to somebody who does not know me and has no clue what medium trashy means and probably took it as like a knock on their hard work and their book. And so naturally I went into panic mode and I was like, oh my God, how do I explain this to her in a concise way that is not overly rambly and apologetic? But like, I sent her this message back and was like, it is not meant to be an insult. Medium trashy is my preferred genre of literature. It really just applies to escapist novels that are really well written, and I love this book so much, and I've been raving about it and will continue to rave about it, and thank you for, you know, writing this masterpiece that has been a bright spot of my 2020. And that's actually not remotely hyperbolic, but obviously she did not respond, and I was like, oh my God, I have mortally offended this author. And so obviously not a big deal, but like, for whatever reason, A, just being an anxious person, and also being somebody who has written a book and knows how much it stings when you receive criticism, whether that's, you know, real or perceived criticism, I just felt terrible. And then she ended up messaging me back like a day later and being like, ha ha ha, like, that's amazing. I'm so thrilled you loved it. Thank you so much for the support. But the interim period, I definitely was very spirally.
Well, I think this is actually a really good spiral to talk about on here and learn from, because it ticks a lot of boxes that for me, and I think you, I know you, also hit home with us. And like you said, your book, like, you've written a book and you know what that feels like. So that's one thing of like,
yeah,
feels like. And but I think the other thing is like, your intention behind this was to support something you genuinely loved so much, and the thought of like something and someone that you, their work was meaningful to you, someone you essentially love or like really admire, them being the person, the object of your spiraling, is the worst feeling.
Totally.
A stranger is one thing you can brush off, but I've had that many a time where it's like, oh, this is the opposite of what my intention was. And that is such a spiral.
Totally. And I think that also nowadays, I'm always thinking about intention versus impact, and realizing that my intention doesn't necessarily matter. And I was actually talking to Logan about this too. And I think sometimes we can try to go into hyper, essentially overcorrect when I will try to overcorrect when I think I've done something wrong that I'm feeling particularly anxious about. So for example, I did mention this to Logan because I felt really spirally about it. And he was like, oh God, he was like, okay, I see that you're upset. But he was also like, he was like, please don't stop or never say medium trashy again, because he was like, you have created this genre for yourself that you enjoy, but also a lot of people online and in your real life also love medium trashy books and use that term and understand what you mean. And yeah, you should probably explain it from time to time, but he's like, don't stop using that term altogether. And it's like, he knew that I was already considering being like, I can never say medium trashy again because it might offend somebody.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other piece of this spiral that I think is interesting to pick up on is that wait time, right? Of like, in between you sending the explanation message and you getting the LOL, thanks for your support. And I know that feeling so well of when you get one of those messages and it's this release, it's this like, oh, okay, now I can move on, you know? And sometimes we don't get those messages.
And I think we mostly don't get those messages.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And B, we don't know how long they're going to take to get often. And so I think like that is where tools come in. And that is where sharing comes in. And that is like the point of this podcast in a way of like, when we are able to share it with Logan on a podcast that you have, it starts to dissipate. And like, I had a hell of a work spiral that you know all about. It instantly started to dissipate the more I shared about it with friends. And I don't think I would have gotten through, and I definitely didn't get a release in that situation.
Yeah.
And I think I would not have gotten through that without sharing about it, because it would have festered so much in my mind. And I want to share this tool that I heard this week from my friend Carolina, who listens to this podcast. Hi.
Hi.
but she said that, I don't know where she got this, maybe her therapist, which is another thing I will recommend. Highly recommend. And talking to your friends about therapy, it's like a 2-for-1 deal. Like, tell each other what you're learning. I mean, we all have a lot of similar neuroses in this family. So, like, let's share, get our money's worth here. But anyway, what she probably heard from her therapist or another source was this concept of whenever you go into that sort of a mindset of like what someone else is thinking in this situation, you know, it was what the author was thinking, or like in every spiral, there's usually some version of that if it has to do with an interpersonal thing. And she says to ask, who said that? Just like you would say in a rumor, because it's a rumor you're spreading to yourself, essentially, of like, okay, but who said that? No one actually said that. Like, that's something you made up in your mind. And I've been doing that whenever I'm thinking about how I'm being perceived by someone else, or I'm thinking about what someone else is thinking. I'm like, okay, who said that? Oh, it was only me in my mind. Like, that's not really that credible of a source, you know?
I love that.
It's good, right?
It's really good.
Yeah.
I'm going to adapt that immediately.
Yeah, it is a good one.
But just all a right. reminder too, before we move on from this, I do think something like that, saying something and then spiraling about it and waiting, you know, hopefully for a response that would release me or whatever, that's something that I've noticed, like these smaller spirals recently, probably because of the pandemic, my anxiety has been heightened, are more common or more numerous, so to speak. And I think being aware of that is key, because I definitely do not have as great of a handle on my anxiety as I have had, you know, in recent years or whatever. And it's helpful sometimes to also remind yourself of that, being like, okay, I'm spiraling about this thing. You know, the who said that thing is a great tool, and I love that so much. And then also being like, okay, and is this a huge deal because it's a huge deal, or are you making a bigger, and like with anxiety, we're always making a bigger deal out of things, but it's just acknowledging, you know, am I in a heightened state of anxiety? And the one thing I am good at is being honest with myself about that. So sometimes just being like, yeah, you're freaking out. Everything seems a lot worse than it is right now.
Yeah.
Sometimes that is also very calming. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Oh, that's really good. And I think just to throw a counterpoint for anyone who might relate to me and you on this, which is like the best part of this, is how we have such different perspectives sometimes, even though we agree on so many things, like or such different experiences. I kind of have felt the opposite of like, because so many, which we'll get into today, decisions have been taken away and there's been a bit more forced groundedness for me. And I just had a pretty complicated previous year to compare it to. That might be part of it, but I've been feeling kind of the opposite, where like I've had weirdly less spirals and they've been less intense, and I've been able to like, yeah, which is really not, I mean, not fully, like there's been tough stuff too, but like comparatively,
so like everyone, the podcast is canceled because Katie has gotten super chill in quarantine.
Okay, that is, you know, for a fact, the amount of long voice texts you've received, you know for a fact that that's not true anywhere close. I was just so I was in, what's the tightest sort of a spiral you can be? What's like a really intense a cyclone?
Yeah.
I was in a very, very bad cyclone prior to the pandemic, that once the pandemic hit, I was like, well, now everyone's in a cyclone. Maybe I can downgrade to a tornado, you know?
Yeah, then we totally just made that up. There's like somebody in the Midwest that experienced a lot of tornadoes. It's like, that is incorrect.
I know. We need a meteorologist. If you are a meteorologist, please send us a voicemail.
Let's also make me want to watch the movie Twister.
Have you been on the Twister ride at Universal Studios?
No.
I have.
Oh, Universal Studios. I'd love to go back to a theme park one day. Okay, today. Spiral for me.
Okay, I mean, as we were thinking about this episode, again, I have one of those weeks where I'm like, what am I not spiraling about? But and it took me forever to choose one, which is fitting. But last week I bought a car, as you know, and it's the first time I've bought a car. I obviously haven't had a car recently because I was living in New York City where you don't need one, which is my favorite part of New York. And prior to that, when I lived in Michigan, I just had hand-me-down cars, which was very privileged and lucky and nice. And I just never had to buy one. And so moving to California, I've come to the realization, as you know, being from here, that I need a car. And
yes,
there was a lot of loss to that of like, oh, because every time I would come to LA, I would like do LA like New York. Like I never rented a car. I would just like take Lyfts and Ubers everywhere, or my friends would drive me, or I would walk a lot. And I did that for the entirety of like the first part of this pandemic, because I've been here since March and I live in Highland Park where it's really walkable, and I wasn't really going many places. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I didn't need to go see anyone who didn't live in my neighborhood. So it worked for me. And I was walking like 10 miles a day. And
holy shit.
Yeah. Cause I would like take my calls on a walk, and I would go on a walk every morning just before I started my day to like commute. And I would walk in the evening, and I would like talk to friends on the phone, and I would take like, it was like what gave me sanity, and it's like my favorite way to exercise. And so I was walking as much as I did in New York. And then when I realized that I needed a car, there was so much loss to like, oh, does this mean I'm not going to be walking anymore? And it made me so emotional. So I vacillated on if I should buy this car or not, or like, should I get it later? But what if I have to pay insurance now? And then this and then that. And I just like bought a fucking Prius. Like it wasn't a big deal. It's like an old Prius. It's like fine. So I, you know, went back and forth. Should I get this car? Should I get another one? I talked to so many people about it. And my friend Adam gave me this really good piece of advice that like, I think actually is relevant with decisions. He was like, all right, well, is the thing you're deciding about rare or like unattainable another time, you know? And
yeah,
in my case, it wasn't. There are Priuses I could look out the window and see like 7. So he was like, all right, well, you should like probably wait then, because you'll be able to get it another time. And then he also gave me this advice of like, because he has like OCD when it comes to decision. Like he'll make a decision, reverse a decision, make a decision again. And I kind of have that too, which leads to this spiral. So I end up being like, okay, I'm not going to get the car. I'm not going to get the car. I tell the person I'm going to buy the car from. And it was really, I was just kind of like, I'll take this one because I know the person and it'll be like an easy transaction. And so I tell her I'm not going to get the car. And she's like, okay, no problem. I totally get it. And then I wake up in the morning and I'm like, should have gotten the car. Should have gotten the car. I felt like hungover from it. And so I end up reaching out to her again. And she's like, oh, sorry, someone else is looking at it from Craigslist. And I was like, God damn it. Long story short, I end up getting the car. But then now I get the car and it has a really bad blind spot. And I kind of wish that I had
no.
the car, and I want to put it on Craigslist and get a new car.
Oh, God.
So that's just what we're working with
Katie
here, people.
Getting a new car every month. Whoa, man. Okay, so I really actually like that, what Adam said about, it's basically, is there a sense of urgency?
Yeah.
To make it, what he's essentially done for you is like eliminate FOMO. Like being like, yeah, you're not missing out because you can do this whenever, which I do think is helpful. But I think big purchases in general, big anxiety trigger, because like,
yeah,
there's always so many what ifs, and like, what if, you know, something happens to this, or it breaks down, or like, what if I'm being screwed in some way, or what if I change my mind, or what if I don't stay in LA, or what, you know, I think that's probably, do you think that's the true source of the anxiety, or do you think it's just like the actual commitment in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was so many things. It's like, I don't really care about cars. Like, I just, it's not
neither
my thing,
I.
You know? Like, I rather have so many different things to spend money on, but I understand the necessity of needing one. And I think this experience did teach me like, oh, well, I actually do spend a lot of time in here, and like, the car is just kind of meh. And when I was home in Michigan, I drove my dad's wife's car for a second, and it was like super luxurious and nice. And I was like, oh, I just never driven one of these. These are like really nice. And it wasn't like I was going to like buy a car like that, but it did make me think like, oh, I'm going to spend a lot of time in here. Like maybe I should have like test driven a couple, or like chosen one, instead of just like been like, oh, my friend sent me this one on Instagram, and like, I know this lady and she's nice, you know? So it was to answer your question, it was the emotion behind the decision. It was the fact that like, this is me, it's me attaching to this city. It's me like being like making a decision by myself as a woman buying this car. It was me like having to deal with a lot of adult things and say goodbye to New York in a way that like I wasn't expecting. And then it's like the being stuck with it thing. It's like, okay, yeah, the money's out of my bank account. That's like a little bit of a hit and at a time where I'm already nervous about that. But also it's like, I'm now stuck with this thing.
I think what you just said is so, it hits home in such a huge way when it comes to making any bigger decisions. Because what you said about the emotion behind it, that really speaks to me. Because I think it's not necessarily, sometimes the decision itself is obscured by like all of these things that we're attaching to it that pertain to the past and to our futures. And like, I think it's the same reason why, you know, somebody who's in a really long-term relationship can feel panicked about getting married, even though they've already committed to that person, because it just, it's the sense of permanence, the acknowledgement of change. All of these things are wrapped up in it. It's like, there's nostalgia and there's possibility and there's all of these things wrapped into one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And I heard Duncan Trussell said this once to me, or like not necessarily to me, I think it was on his podcast, but he says that happiness is novelty. Like we're actually, or maybe it wasn't happiness. I think it was actually love. Like love is novelty. Like it's the newness of things that makes it, that's so attractive to us. And it's not to say that you can't have that long term, but like that's why with romantic relationships or with anything, like relationships have to grow and change form and mold and remold. And if something is stagnant, like it gets stale, you know, like we have to be fluid. And I think there is, I agree with that. I think, you know, I think happiness and love and novelty is really what we're chasing. And I think big decisions or decisions where you're going to have to stick with something are scary because you are letting go of novelty. You're letting go of uncertainty for certainty. And there's loss to that because by saying yes to, for instance, the car, I'm saying no to the idea of finding a different car or not having a car or not being tethered to a place, you know? And I think, you know, that the day that I got that car, my friend took me to pick it up and then he left. And then I was there by myself and I was like, oh my God, I haven't been out of my little neighborhood alone in 3 months, you know, I haven't driven anywhere and I felt like too free. And I think it was the emotion behind the decision, not really the decision itself. And I could very clearly feel that in that moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I mean, just shows how intricate this kind of stuff is, you know, and more so with anxiety, because I think we cling on to it more.
Absolutely. And I think that when the reason, so for me, at least, I identify decision-making as such a huge anxiety trigger, I guess, or a place where my anxiety pools, is centered around the unknown. And we all know that anxiety feeds on the unknown. Like, yeah. Have you ever seen Sliding Doors?
Yes. I think about that movie all the time.
I think about it all the time. And just to give a quick synopsis for anyone who has not watched it, it's like old school Gwyneth.
Perfect part of the 90s.
Like super 90s.
Haircuts.
Yes. And she basically, it's a side-by-side. The movie has two parallel narratives and they're different based on whether or not she makes her train in the morning. So it's like if the subway door, in one narrative, the subway door is like she gets onto the subway, and in the other, the subway door is closed and she doesn't make it. And like in the one, you know, she finds her husband cheating on her. She ends up like all of these things unfold. And then it's like in the other one, her life is completely different because she did. And it's just, that was a terrible description, by the way. Wow.
No, I thought it was good. I got the gist. I totally got it.
But anyway, I think I have Sliding Doors moments all the time where I will play out two scenarios based, or like, you know, I'm like, I will have a completely different life if I make this choice. And sometimes I think that's true. It's like choosing to, if I'm being completely honest, I'm having this so much with the decision of whether or not I want to have children. It absolutely changes the entire course of your life. And so like I play out these scenarios, and I think that's a very obvious example. And I also think it's really important to acknowledge, because I know most of our listeners are women. I know we also have a lot of people in like our age group. Yeah. And this is something I've talked about before, and it like really broke my heart, people's responses to being like, thank you so much for admitting that you don't know whether or not you want to have children. And sometimes the things that I'm vocal about, I don't realize are controversial.
Same.
So I'm like, sometimes when I say something and I get a response, I'm like, oh, wow, am I not supposed to say that?
Yeah.
But I do think that it's important to have, to be open about the things, about these like life choices or things that we're internally debating, whether it's, you know, marriage, kids, career stuff, finances, whatever, the taboo topics, because I do think shrouding those things in mystery, so to speak, creates so much more anxiety for those of us who then like feel completely alone because nobody else is talking about it. And they're like, oh, am I the only one that's spiraling about like whether or not to have children? And should I feel guilty about this? And then like, you know, it's something that is constantly asked of me too. Like literally I think it's a filler for when people don't know what to talk about. The same thing. It's like, if you're dating someone, people are like, oh, when are you guys getting married? And then the second you get married, it's like, oh, like, when are you guys having kids? You know, it's the same. And we've talked about this in the respect of like, as soon as my last, you know, a book comes out, people are like, so what's your next book? And it's like, oh, dear God, can you give me 1 second? Like, I'm trying to figure out my life. And I think with the sliding door analogy, it's like, it's so easy to play out both sides. But I think where a lot of the anxiety lies is if you play out both sides and you're like, oh, there's clearly a better side, then there's not much anxiety there. Then you just make the decision.
Right.
It's the times where both sides look equally appealing, or there are also scenarios in which you have to make a decision and both has a terrible, like both options are terrible, you know, and you have to pick the lesser of two evils, so to speak.
Right.
So it's always that both of these options are good or both of these options are bad, where the anxiety really kicks into high gear because you don't know what the right choice is. And there's this like weird dark cloud being like, don't choose wrong or you'll fuck up your whole life.
Yeah. And I think that's really astute because it's interesting. Obviously, when a decision has a clear yes or no, like a clear, this is great, this is not, like those decisions we don't even think about. It's always the decisions that have kind of equal uncertainty on either side or equal, there's a mystery there. And that's what was cool about that movie is that in both of those scenarios, like I think there was one that was like a bit better, but both of them had both good. It wasn't like one was a alternate universe where everything was wonderful and one was an alternate universe where everything went to shit. It was like there were good things and bad things in both.
Yes. And I think that was literally what I was going to say when I was like, on the positive side of this, I think we are still relatively young, but we have enough life experience to have made big decisions in both personal and professional realms. And to have made peace with those decisions and also know that like nothing is perfect and there is no right choice in the sense that often decisions are, let's put it this way too, like often decisions are made for us in certain ways, and things that can feel really, really terrible can come full circle. Like we talked about your breakup and how so many wonderful things, you know, have come out of that in the past year and a half. And you learn so much from that experience. And the same thing has happened to me countless times in my career. The moments where you've gotten so close to something and you think that this is your new life course, so to speak, or your next big project, and then all of a sudden somebody makes the decision for you that it's not. So in my case, like I've had a book proposal that was almost sold, and I had been like, well, this year I write a book, and then that abruptly fell through. And that was before, you know, the dude diet and whatever, but that fell through, and that's what forced me into becoming a private chef, which I needed to do that to build street cred so I could get a book deal later. And like, there have been so many behind the scenes, like TV things and stuff, where things got so close and I was like, oh, this is my new life. And then they come crashing down.
Yeah.
And because somebody decided like, oh no, that's actually not what's going to happen. So sometimes I do think that we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to make certain decisions that there is no real wrong choice. And in other times, sometimes we feel like we have to make decisions preemptively. And I want to clarify that. Sometimes like I'll start to spiral, I'll make a decision. And let's use like this failed book proposal as an example. I will think that I'll make the decision that this is like, I'm going to work on this project. And then I'll start spiraling about a lot of things related to that decision without ever having confirmation that that's happening. That's a very confusing statement to make. What I'm trying to say is that sometimes decisions will be made for us and we've already started spiraling about so many other things that are related to a decision that hasn't even fully come to fruition or come to pass yet.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I think with all of this, it's kind of where a spirituality can come in, or like it can be a bit esoteric, or there can be a bit of like chance, you know what I mean? Because it's like, we can't, it's letting go of control and like surrendering to an experience. Because when we talk about sliding glass doors, I think about string theory. And I remember we can talk about my breakup with Nick, right? There could be a parallel universe, a sliding glass doors where we've figured out that relationship and I could have like had a kid by now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Who knows? Or like it worked out and it was great. And then there's this parallel universe where I'm like, you know, have traveled the world and I moved coasts and whatever. And that's cool too. And there's like several. And I think time makes you feel like those huge decisions, the further you feel from them, the further you feel closer to the possibilities and the alternatives that could have happened. And I think that is a relief, you know, like that there's relief to that. And there's also, that's why like when you're still in it, it's really stressful because you're thinking about all the different options, right? And I think something that Adam, who's becoming our decision guru in this episode, something that he told me was like, it's being in the in-between space, the space where you haven't aligned with a choice and you are deciding essentially. That's where the discomfort is. Like once you land the plane and choose, you just have to align with that fully, which like I gave a bad example of that with the Prius of like, I'm still kind of like, I might put it on Craigslist, but like essentially that decision is done. Like if I want to sell it later, I can. And so I think it's like just being like, okay, I made my bed and now I'm going to sleep in it. And I think that there is a relief there. It's like when I got a hit of dopamine when I was like, okay, I said no about the car. Like that was like, okay, relief. And then I knew somewhere in my gut that like maybe wasn't the right decision. And I did say yes. And like the thing with this all is that like in most scenarios, unless it's a clear yes or no, there isn't a right choice or not. Like if I would have not bought the car, that would have been fine. Maybe I would have found another Prius later. Or buying the car now, maybe I really needed to do that. Who knows? No one will ever know. And like, I think as soon as I can just align with the choice and not be in the like, I need to talk it out with everyone and I'm not sure what to do. And like, there's so much discomfort to that. Like that is so all consuming for me. Like right now I'm moving and trying to figure out what neighborhood I want to live in and apartments and whatever. And like, you know, I get it on, well, we have different levels of decisions that we want to go through, but I get it on what we're going to be calling level one decisions, you know, of like changing my outfit 7 times or not being able to decide what to eat. And like, I think the more I can just decide, it's practice maybe, but I don't even know if it is that.
I think it is practice. I think executive decision making is a practice. And I recognize that I have certain friends who are really good at making decisions. And part of me sometimes thinks that anxiety, specifically as it relates to anxious people pleasers, I think we tend to weigh decisions and make them with other people in mind sometimes in a way that may not necessarily serve us in the best way. I'm like, oh, like I want to make these other people happy. I've gotten a lot better at this. And my biggest piece of advice there is to like really do the thing. It's actually similar to what you said at the beginning of this episode. Like, who said that? Really tune in to be like, okay, and stop projecting the outcome of your decision in terms of how it will make other people feel or anything. Just like really focus inward and be like, what do I want here? And why do I feel so guilty making the decision that serves me? And some of the people that I've observed in my life that, and without being an asshole, obviously, like I'm not suggesting being a narcissist, but like I am suggesting like really trying to tap into how you feel about making the decision and tuning out other people's opinions, which so often are perceived opinions. They're not real or like perceived reactions, how we think people are going to feel based on what we do. But like observing the people in my life who are great decision makers, they tend to trust their instincts in a way that I am always working towards. But also there's just something about a not anxious mind that can be like walking around just being like choice A or B, A, B, A, A, you know, like without actually, it doesn't mean that there isn't thought put into it. It's just that there's less fear attached to the outcome of either decision. And so I do think it gets easier when you commit to making decisions, trusting your gut, believing in yourself, all of these platitudes. These all are such cliches, but it's actually true. And I think that sometimes there is that spiritual element that's like, I say this over and over and over, you can't connect the dots going forward. You can only connect them going back. So having this, I don't know, faith, if you want to call it that, that things happen for a reason. And I hate when you're going through something and somebody's like, everything happens for a reason.
You're like, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think when you look back at your life and the sum of all of your past decisions have led you to either a good place or a bad place, you know, it's possible that it could be either one of those things. But just knowing that, like, as we always say on this podcast too, like the teachable moments are really where things go wrong. It's like the failures, so to speak. And even if they're not real failures, it's like you will learn something. If you've made the wrong decision, it's going to teach you something. And so latching onto that positive, you can reframe in a way that there are no quote unquote wrong decisions. But I think the practice element is huge. And I think that also sometimes minimizing decisions in general is a wonderful thing, even if it's just streamlining the decisions you're making on a day-to-day. In a really frivolous example, when I got married, I hated wedding planning, but I minimized decisions to a point that it was comical. And like, I got a wedding planner. I was like, I would rather spend less on the wedding to have a wedding planner so that I don't have to make a bazillion decisions. And I literally told her, I was like, please don't present me with more than two options for anything. I just want to choose between two things. And it made my life so easy. And I don't know, have I ever told you this about when I went wedding dress shopping?
No, please tell
me. I went wedding dress shopping for 45 minutes.
Oh my God.
I went to Kleinfeld's from Say Yes to the Dress because my friends had told me, I had no clue what kind of wedding dress I wanted. I just like wasn't one of those people that thought about their wedding until their wedding actually happened. And so I was very overwhelmed. And they were like, just go to somewhere like Kleinfeld's, look at all the different styles out there. You'll find something that's you'll find a style or styles that you like, and then you can go, or designers, and then you can go seek out those designers or styles in a more streamlined sense. But I went to Kleinfeld's, I picked like, you know, I don't know, 5 dresses. My mom, who's late for everything, they only give you an hour. It's very strict. They will kick you out of the store after hours.
I remember walking by all the time. Like, I can picture where it is.
My mom, who's late for everything, showed up when there were 10 minutes left in my hour. So I had already tried these dresses on, and this woman had showed me a dress, and I had said, put that in the room. My mom will love that. And so I put on, I think, 2 dresses for my mom, not that one. And she said, oh, you know, you look beautiful, yada, yada. And then I put on the dress I knew she would love, and I walked out, and she started crying and was so happy and loved it so much. And then I was just like, I'm done. This is fine. And so I want it, like, it was important to me that she loved it and I liked it. And I ended up not really loving it. And the wild thing, this was an example of when I did decision making, right? Like, I made the decision in those short times. If I had devoted significantly more time, could I have found a better dress? Yes, but I also made the decision that I did not want to devote time to doing that. So I just made that decision. I chose the dress. And then later when I had feelings like, oh, I don't really love this dress, I was weirdly okay with it because I had really committed to that decision.
Yeah.
And I was also like, who cares? It's one day out of your life. Like, it's just a dress. But, and I'm not diminishing anybody who wants their wedding dress to be the most beautiful dress they ever wear. I totally understand that. It was just a personal thing that, like, I chose not to wedding dress shop. But that was a really silly example of choosing to commit to your decision once it's made, and the relief that you mentioned earlier. Just like so much relief when you're just like, this is it.
Yep. That's yet another point that Adam mentioned when he was talking to me about this car choice of like, he was like, look, man, because you've already been spiraling so much about this choice, just know that no matter what you choose, your brain is going to come in and tell you it's the wrong choice. And that's only because you've spent so many weeks thinking about this. You've talked about it with so many people. You've like gone too far. Where the wedding dress example is an example of like, even though you had a moment where you're like, oh, I actually love it. You were like, fine, because it took you 45 minutes. But if you had had 7 options and like had that thought of like, oh, I don't really like it, but there was this other one that I did love and I should have done that one, then that would be a different story, you know? And so I think shortening the time where you're in the in-between, that liminal space is toxic. That liminal space is distracting. Yes. It takes you away from your life. It takes you away from creativity, concentration. It's taking up brain space, and it's going to make the come down harder. It's going to make the thinking that you made the wrong decision worse the longer you spend there. And Abraham Hicks has this thing where it's like, align with a choice and then be done with it, because no matter what happens, life will reroute you. You know, like if you have to put a destination in the GPS, or it can't reroute you anywhere. You know, if you're unsure and uncertain and in the in-between, you're stagnant. If you put a destination in, it might take you longer to get there because it was the wrong one, but at least you're going somewhere and it will reroute you. But if you're not doing anything, it's going to take you even longer.
Listen to that again, people. That was very good, Katie.
Thank you.
Wow. I mean, the concepts, I feel calmer just knowing the concept that life will reroute me. Fuck yes.
Well, dude.
Podcast complete. Anxiety done.
I'll tell you this. Those who can't do, teach. Because I can say all of this so confidently and know all of this intellectually. However, in the moment, I'm not embodying it. You know what I mean? Like, I am struggling to make a choice, like talking it out with everyone. I'm a verbal processor. So when I'm going through a choice, I have to call all of my friends. I have to get everyone's opinion. Like, I can't just make a choice. And I think part of that is like making a lot of choices alone of like, you know, absolutely. I have a lot of big life choices and nobody gives a shit. You know what I mean? And it's like, and that's a bit harder with the decisions because it 100% of the choice is on me, which is cool. I don't have to compromise, but also 100% of the consequences are on me. And so that makes it a bit scary.
I completely agree with you. And I do not mean to diminish that in any way, but I will throw into the ring for anybody who's listening and is like, wait a second. Because sometimes being in a relationship and making decisions together, if you end up being the one who made the decision, so to speak. So if in the couple, you're going back and forth on something, and then ultimately one person cedes and is like, fine, we'll go with your choice. Then if it comes crashing down, ooh, not only do you have to experience the fallout, but then the other person is like, I told you so. Yeah. Or like, yeah, you made this mess.
Yeah.
So just also something to be wary of. The grass is always greener.
Oh yeah, that sounds terrible. I mean, that was a huge thing in my relationship of like, I didn't really want to move back to Michigan. He didn't want to move to New York, and neither of us wanted to be the one that was like,
forced,
you know,
the other.
Told you so, you know, like it's tough.
The one thing that I want to talk about just in terms of, you know, now that we've hashed out all the issues we have with decision making, some of the things that have been really helpful to me, because I know that we're always trying to provide at least some sort of an advice in addition to making everyone feel less alone if they too are spiraling about the same things that we are. But as I mentioned earlier about streamlining decision-making processes and minimizing sort of trivial decisions, I realize that I do that naturally, in the sense that people are often commenting how much I love traditions and rituals. And I realize the reason I love them so much is because they minimize decision-making in my life. Like, I've never had to decide what to eat on a Sunday night because we're eating pizza no matter where we are. You know, that's what's going down.
What kind of pizza? Just kidding.
Yeah. That is up for debate. But same thing. It's like, I really love, or Friday night pasta. Yes, I'm just giving food example. Wednesday indecision toast. But also, in addition to food things, it's like, I love a good jumpsuit because it's a full outfit. I don't have to labor over like what top to match to a bottom. Or I work out at the same time every day because I know that deciding when I want to work out or what workout I want to do. Like, everyone's like, oh, you really love Melissa Woodhull. It's like, I do. But part of me thinks I love her so much because like, I'm not interested in having to make a decision about any other workout that I plan to do.
Totally.
So sometimes just building routine into your day, we've talked about this endlessly about how helpful routine can be for managing anxiety. But I think we haven't specifically linked routine to minimizing the anxiety surrounding decision making. And I think it's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a good point. And something that I think I could bring into my life more. And I thought about a lot in New York. Living in New York for me was like just a Disneyland for adults, you know, of like,
yeah,
any type of food, any person I can hang out with, I can go anywhere. I had so much transport, you know, like I had so, like I just was, there were endless opportunities and options. And I loved that, but I think it didn't love me, you know? And I think it caused me a lot of stress and a lot of FOMO and a lot of like, well, if I say yes to this, okay, I'm going to go to this party and then I think I can make it uptown. And your friend's boyfriend's birthday? Sure. Yeah, I'll be there. Of course. You know, like, oh, it's in Harlem. I'm in Brooklyn. No problem. I got it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was just down. And I think a lot of that was to avoid my feelings. And I think it was to avoid having to make a decision that I would be like, I'll just do it all. I can fit it in, you know? And that is ridiculous. And I think traveling was one way for me to minimize my choices and be like, I'm just going to go all the way across the earth where I'm in a different time zone in a different day. And then I don't have to say no, you know? And yeah. Then when I came back, the pandemic happened and it was like, oh, you can stay in this even longer. Like suddenly the week I got back to LA was, you know, maybe 2 weeks out before shelter in place started. And I, for the first time in 2 months, was juggling, okay, Thursday night, I'm going to hang out with Val. Tuesday, I have dinner with Amanda. Okay, how can I get to the, I'll meet up with at the wing with, you know, and I was like doing that dance and it was so stressful to me. And I spent so much time slaving over deciding what to do where and managing my calendar. And then the funniest part of all of this that really showed me the contrast of my lack of routine and my lack of, you know, how much each week took for me to do that was like, prior to that, I hadn't been doing it because I was traveling and it was such a relief. And then all of those plans that I spent so much time analyzing and redoing and rejiggering ended up not happening because of COVID and yeah. They never happened again. But I spent hours like stressing about it. And I even had weeks in COVID where like I would get that with just like Zoom hangs and like things I had on my, and I was like, I don't ever want to go back to that over schedulization. And I think what's interesting about that, and I think this kind of leads us into FOMO a bit, is that like saying yes to one thing is saying no to another thing. And sometimes normal you will want to, like, you at your best, right? You who's like not on your period and feeling good and like slept enough and you know, got all your stuff done would want to go to that thing. But mm-hmm. You don't know if you're going to be that in that mode on Thursday at 7, you know? So then Thursday at 7 comes and you're like, I really did want to do this on Monday at 4, but now I don't. And like, there's some loss there of like, bummer that I don't have the formula combination right in my energy level to want to be here. And I think that is a decision that's like self-honesty. And it's also letting go of people-pleasing to cancel plans. And then sometimes, like, I remember my eating disorder specialist dietitian told me, like, no more canceling plans. Like, just, and I think I really, like, overcorrected with that, with, like, my New York thing of, like, doing too much. But mm-hmm. I was so apt to, like, cancel plans for rigidity, essentially, that I think her point in that was like, just align with your choice, kind of like the rerouting thing, like just align with your choice and complete it and do it and see that through, because then you don't have to like spend all the energy rejiggering. You can just like do what's on your to-do list that day. And I think it's a balance between that advice and the advice of like, actually be honest with yourself. Are you doing this because of a scarcity mindset of like, you'll never get this opportunity again, or your friend will hate you if you cancel? Or are you doing this out of, I genuinely don't want to go to this anymore?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the FOMO is a tricky beast.
Yeah.
And I sometimes do you ever find though, I know that the overscheduling related to never canceling is overwhelming. Do you find that you are able to strike a balance ever? Have you found a good way to strike a balance so that you don't get terrible FOMO? I weirdly don't get FOMO. This is strange, I know. And I think it partially has to do with like, I struggle to make decisions, but as I've said, once I make them, I'm deeply committed to them. Mm-hmm. So if I can't, sometimes again, the decision is out of my hands. Like if I can't go to something, that's the only time that I will sometimes have FOMO, is if I'm unable to attend something that I want to attend, mm-hmm. then I have FOMO. But in terms of turning down invitations or canceling things, I'm like, well, I chose not to go, so that's it.
Yeah, I'm the opposite.
I know that's strange, but I feel the same way about when, for example, somebody asked a good question about working out and was like, do you ever feel badly if you're on vacation or you're traveling or whatever and you don't do a workout because you know that your workout helps your anxiety? And that was such a layered question for me, because I was like, what are you actually feeling guilty about? Are you giving yourself more anxiety knowing that you didn't do something that helps your anxiety? But the way I sort of mitigate that is just being like, today I am choosing not to work out. It's not good. And I make that decision and then I feel no guilt because I actively made the decision. Passively making the decision by just being like, oh, maybe I'll work out later, or like I'll get in or whatever. And then you can't make it happen. And that's where I find the FOMO or the guilt creeps in, is when you haven't made a decision and stuck to it. Mm. It's like, maybe I'll do this. Maybe I'll go to that party. Maybe I'll get my workout in. Maybe I'll do this. And then if you just actively shut it down and say, I choose not to do this, for whatever reason, my brain responds really well to that on the anxiety front. And I can say to myself, like, you chose not to work out. It's not going to affect your anxiety. It just doesn't work today. And you chose not to get in. You'll do it tomorrow, or you'll do it the next day, or you'll work out on your regular schedule next week. There's no reason to work yourself up over this. And that's, again, self-talk, and it takes practice. And that's not to say that I'm remotely perfect at it, but I would urge anybody who has yet to try it to practice committing to making a decision and then see if that affects your FOMO or your feelings of guilt surrounding said decision said choice.
Well, I like that. And I've historically, with routine, speaking to about routines specifically right now, of I have a tendency, or in the past have had a tendency, to be incredibly dogmatic about routines of like, okay, I'm a TM meditator. I do my 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening. And if I don't do it, I'm a piece of shit garbage bag, and it means I'm never going to do it again, you know? And the entire time I lived in Michigan, I did it like for years. And if I remember one time, like, I remember I had a concert one night and I like had to leave early for the concert. And I remember like being at the concert and being like, fuck, I didn't do my evening one. What am I going to do? Like, this means I'm not a TM meditator. Like, I was freaking out. And that is the opposite of like what meditation is meant to do. You know what I mean? And I think it goes like with routines, it's like, if it's serving you, then it's good. If it's not, it's counterproductive. And like, the decision of whether to do it or not is the whole point of the routine. It's like, you don't have to decide, but also you can decide to shift that at any point as well.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with the self-awareness and a self-honesty. And I think, you know, I had that a lot with several decisions. And the weird part of like what traveling was really good for, I think, was it forced me to shake up all of my choice. And honestly, getting like really depressed, like, the things that were working for me weren't working for me anymore. Like, I couldn't meditate. And then traveling, it's like, I couldn't eat these certain things or go to these workout classes. And you know what else will do that real well? A pandemic, you know, like a lot of having to like be flexible and be like, okay, like put in your routines when they feel good, but be honest when they don't, and pivot. And I think that that's a choice, you know, and it goes back to like aligning with, like, choosing something and aligning with it and then going from there. It's the theme of this episode is like shortening the in-between time.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you say that, because, you know, we are always harping on the importance of flexibility in anxiety management. Rigidity is the kiss of death, in the sense that anxiety is a fucking bitch. And it morphs over time. It changes. We get new symptoms. Old symptoms go away. Management tools that are super effective will not work and then work again. And certain combinations of things make you feel great. And then those things can turn on you. And it's just always, always, always remembering that it's humbling to think about this, to be like, you never really have it 100% under control, and letting go of that expectation is liberating in and of itself. But just maintaining a sense of fluidity, because as Katie said, the GPS of life will reroute us. So don't fear the one wrong decision or the many wrong decisions, or get stuck in the cycle of FOMO, because tomorrow's a new day. We can reroute ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, or we will be rerouted.
Or we'll be rerouted by the universe.
And I think a way to put this concisely is like, choose as quickly as possible, you know, with doing what you got to do and weighing the options and
do your due diligence
and all of that. Yeah. But just choose, because the sooner you choose, the sooner you can get to the rerouting. And
yep,
the sooner you choose, the less the hangover will be for making you think you made the wrong decision. Because ultimately, like, there really isn't a wrong decision, but you'll think there is one if you are like spending too much time with too many options.
And keep practicing.
Yeah. Do you feel complete on decisions?
I do. I mean, we could decide to keep talking about this, but I'm going to make the active decision to land the plane. I'm curious to see how people respond to this conversation with their own stories, just because I do think that decision-making is one way in which people's anxiety manifests itself really differently. Just like how I said, like, I don't really get FOMO. Your FOMO is terrible.
Yeah.
you know, like, I do think that this is something, some people really struggle with small decisions. Other people are fine with small decisions and struggle with big decisions. So if you want to share with us, definitely hit us up, spiralingcommunity@gmail.com. Also, we wanted to mention, for those of you who are here with us and are listening and have been listening for a while, we hate to ask you for anything. We really do, but we would be so grateful if you would consider leaving a rating or review on iTunes, even if you're listening to it someplace else. Those ratings and reviews are integral to, I don't know why I said integral.
Us being able to keep doing it. I mean, ultimately, it's like, we like doing this. We like you guys. We want to be able to keep doing it. So
we wanted to do this podcast to help people, and ratings and reviews, sadly, are the only ways that we get more eyes on this podcast. So it could potentially be super helpful to somebody just by you clicking a button.
Exactly. Thank you.
So thank you in advance.
Thank you in advance. High, higher, highest?
Yes. Do you want to start?
Sure. Okay. Mine always are going to be out of order, but that's fine.
That is fine.
Okay. It seems like it was not that far away, but it's the end of the week now. But I had a really good weekend. I just like hung out with friends and like drank and was outside, and that felt really nice and fun. And like, it was actually a weekend. I felt the difference for once.
I love that.
Yeah. And that was nice. So that's pretty damn high. Higher than that, I'm like looking around my room. I have this pair of white Levi's I really like. They're like a white high-waisted Levi. They'd be really cute on you, actually. You should get a pair. I'll send you the link.
I will look it. Okay.
So I really like those. Oh, I had another high that I thought of that left my mind. Oh, I remember. I went to the farmer's market this weekend, and I made for my friend and I, like, you'll be proud of this, I think, like a farmer's market. I made us dinner, basically. I called it like a farmer's market plate. So I had like really good basil and like a bunch of heirloom tomatoes, and I cut them up with olive oil and the fancy sea salt that you would always put on our indecision toast.
Oh, and yeah.
That starts with an M in like the green and white box. I made a really good... Yeah, I made a really good arugula salad with strawberries, and I got this really nice sourdough, and I like toasted the sourdough, and we just kind of like put the basil and the tomato and the other thing on it, you know what I mean? And it was kind That's of like, amazing. I guess like a tartine. Yeah, it was good. We ate it outside and had a bottle of wine. It was lovely.
Those are great ones. Also, I feel like those were in order this week.
Oh, great. Thank you. Good.
Let me see. My high. Oh, this is tough. My high. Oh, this is a good one. These headbands that I like went on sale. So I got like three of them. And I think I've just been wearing headbands every day because it makes me feel less sad about my roots and the fact that I'm like 9 months overdue for a haircut. So like, it helps me feel more put together. And for that, I'm very grateful. My higher is, it's,
No, the ranking is so hard. What's wrong with us?
The ranking is really
We just can't decide.
We truly can't decide. Speaking of routine, I love this like less fruit, not gross smoothie that I make.
Oh, that was the first thing you ever made for me. Yes. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
I missed that smoothie. I was so worried that day that I was going to spill it on your white couch.
And you did not. And I was very proud. So I love that smoothie. And I ran out of almond milk. And so I used coconut water. And it was delicious. And it's the little things. And so now I've been putting coconut water in there and like a big squeeze of lemon. And it's sort of like sweet and tart. And it's delicious. Wow. So anyway, if anybody wants to make that smoothie, there's a recipe for it on my blog. But you can put coconut water in it. And then feel extra hydrated.
I need that.
My highest. Ooh. Okay. So, you know, we obviously have pizza on Sunday, but I've been making pizza on Sundays in my attempt to perfect a faux Ruby Rosa pizza. And this past Sunday, Logan convinced me to go pick up pizza. There's one pizza place in Bar Harbor. It's like a 10-minute drive from us that does takeout, and they actually make really good pizza. And I don't know why I was like kind of anti doing this
because it wasn't Ruby Rosa.
Because it was not Ruby Rosa, and I like to have my swirl because rituals. And we picked up the pizza, and there was sort of a park nearby, and there was a handful of people very, very spaced out, so it was safe. And we brought a couple beers and we brought our pizza and we sat on this hill overlooking the water and watched the sunset and ate our pizza. And there was a really cute Bernedoodle puppy, and it was the highest. It was the best.
I saw that actually on Logan's Instagram.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really great.
So it was.
And you were wearing a headband.
And I was obviously wearing a headband. but yeah. It was the best.
That's great. That's a good highest.
That was a good highest. I hope to have as much luck this week.
Me too. Yes, absolutely. Are we doctors?
As you may have gathered from our conversation, we are not. We are also not mental health professionals or experts of any kind. We're just two friends sharing our experiences with anxiety.
If you're struggling with your mental health, we strongly encourage talking to a professional.
We love therapy.
We really do.
And remember, if you're spiraling, you are not alone. You are not weird or damaged or crazy. And you don't owe anyone an explanation for your mental health.
We love you. Bye.
Bye.